Hi, I'm Daryl, compulsive overeater. Yeah, and the last half of step one, and step one, of course, is we admitted we are powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. And I had real problem with that part. I had no problem with the first half of the step. I was definitely a compulsive overeater, and I talked a little bit about that last week. But that second half of the step, I thought, well, gosh, I'm the president of a small manufacturing company started by my dad, and we had about 100 people working for us, and I was part of an industry where I played an active role and spent time on the board of directors meeting on the East Coast, all these things. I said, wow, that's not being my life is not unmanageable at all. And but then I started really looking at it differently once I got to the program. And started doing the writing and started doing 10 steps and started seeing some of my behavior from a little bit of a distance rather than up too close. And I began to see that my life wasn't all that great, and my behavior wasn't all that great. And so I looked on page 52 of the big book. They have what they call the bedevilments. And it says we were having trouble with personal relationships. We couldn't control our emotional natures. We were prey to misery and depression. We couldn't make a living. We had a feeling of uselessness. We were full of fear. We were unhappy. We couldn't seem to be of real help to other people. So those are called the bedevilments. And as I started looking at the bedevilments and started comparing my life to that, I could see that yeah, I did have some problems there, and especially starting out with the relationship part. Unfortunately, my marriage was basically on the rocks. By the way, my ex-wife had given me permission to share her part of the story. She had done that several years ago. She passed away a couple of years ago. But the story starts with her alcoholism, and so she was actively drinking, and I was actively staying away from the house, and just coming home to eat and sleep, and basically, and then I was off early the next morning, back to work again. And so if you took a look at our relationship, it was almost like two strangers living in the same house. We were both kind of on our own path. She was taking care of the kids and the household, and I was off doing business and taking care of the career, and so that was what my relationship looked like. It got worse from there as when she was ready to do something about the alcoholism, that she agreed to make herself available to a rehab place, and a local rehab place at St. Jude's. But she said, I don't want to go there unless I get drunk again. I don't think I'm going to get drunk again. And she did. And so when I took her down there, she didn't want to go. And she was trying to push my buttons and trying to get me to stop, turn around, take her back home. And she, of course, she was drunk, and Yeah, but I just kept going, and we got down there, and so she went in, and they were waiting for her, and so they put her to bed and gave her some medication and that, and she had said some things that were really, really hurtful, and so I thought, well, tomorrow morning she'll be sober, and then she won't be that way. So after in the morning before I went to work, I stopped by to see her, but she was still that way, and she was really mean and in that. And I remember going to my office, and this big office, and I went in and I closed the door and I sat down behind this big desk and I just cried. I had nobody I could call, nobody I could share with. I just sat there and I cried. So that doesn't sound like a guy that's really got his life all together and all figured out, but that was kind of the backdrop of what was going on. And with the bedevilment, it also talks about the inability to control emotions. And I had on occasion I had lost my temper, and I had yelled and hollered, called people names, and that sort of thing. And so that was also another thing that I started looking at. So, well, that wasn't too good. And then it says falling prey to misery and depression. So the misery was that I was miserable in my job. I did not like it, even though I was doing a good job at it. I didn't like it. And I felt like that I really never had a choice, that because my dad had started the company and I was the oldest, that I was expected to step in, and I just did. And I really didn't especially want to be there, but there wasn't anything I could do. I really felt trapped in my own life there, and so that was the depression part. It was interesting that I had started to go to a therapist about a year before that, and when I came into the program, and yeah, I'm not going to talk about recovery this week because we're talking about step one, but when I came to program and I was going to this guy and had been going to him, and I told and I started it as I started actually let's say sobering up or getting abstinent and clearing my thoughts, I began to realize that I was depressed. And so I told my psychiatrist, I said, Doc, I said, I think I'm depressed. And he said, oh, that's great. That's great news. And I said, what are you talking about? What's so great about it? And he said, you've been depressed all your life and you finally see it. And that was something that I didn't know. I was operating out of a depressed state, and when you operate out of a depressed state, everything looks bad. It doesn't matter what direction you look at, that depression kind of puts that gray pall over everything. Let's see what else they had for the bedevilments. We had a feeling of uselessness. We were full of fear. That was it. So fear and worry, of course, worry about work things constantly. But fear had been a common theme that had pretty much run through my life ever since I was a little kid. My mom's whole side of the family was pretty much fear-based. And so her view of the world was full of fear, and so was mine in those days. And it was going to take a while for me to get rid of that, but in the meantime, the life that I was living was full of worry and fear. Every direction that I looked at, that I would see the same thing. That was pretty much when I found when I looked at my life. And then the other day, I was looking for something else, and I ran across my original character defect list. And so I thought that kind of fits in because it kind of tells me what or gives a picture of what my life kind of looked like at the time, what I looked like at the time, and my attitude and outlook towards life. And the character defect list that I just wrote down a few of them. But I figure when we get to step six and seven, I'll dust that off again and really go into it more. But it was one of my character defects was dependence on false securities, people, money, self, and luck. And that was me. That was me. That if I only had enough money, if I could only lose some weight, if I could depend on people to do what they're supposed to do, all these things, and even luck, I'll take a chance, and maybe it'll turn out okay. And then and those kinds of that kind of a life that I lived in. And then there was in the position that I had a lot of authority in this small little world, which was the company, and using that to influence people and to and in a negative way. And so that was one of the character defects I had to look at, and vainglory, dreams of pomp and power, I think they said. And that's that was something that I really especially when I looked at my role in the business world and my competitors and everything, I was always trying to get an edge on them, getting a leg up on the competition and that. And we did a lot of things that that once I got in program, I couldn't do because of the honesty factor. But that was a part of what I was carrying around, feelings of guilt. My sponsor had to teach me what the difference was between feeling guilty and being guilty, because I was guilty of everything. I took on responsibility for everybody and everything, and it was weighing me down on a daily basis. And that was then the depression was feeding that as well. I remember my false pride was one of the character defects. And my sponsor told me that instead of me thinking I'm running the show, to look at myself as an ant on a log. And I'm floating down a river, and I've got a hold of a nail that's sticking out of the log, and I think I'm steering the log. And as long as the river's going straight, I'm doing fine. But once it starts turning and we starts going over rapids and stuff, I can turn the nail all I want, and I'm going where the log's going. And that was something that I had to learn, that I was not in control of my destiny. That all I was trying to always live in the outcome, wherever that was. But what I needed to live in was the trust of a higher power. But I hadn't got that far yet in program. So, but this was a kind of a snapshot of the person that I was, and the life that I led. One of my character defects was self-loathing. And that I had a very low opinion of myself. And in fact, another character defect was a feeling of inferiority or inadequacy. That was very a very common feeling that I had, and I tried to hide it, of course, because you're always in the competition with your competitors, or they're going to do whatever they can to try to. To bring it down. And that was one of the things that I had to fight, constantly fight against, is that I already had a feeling of inferiority, but I couldn't let them see it, so I had to pretend. And that's a big part of what my life looked like at that time. I was pretending to be me. but I was not me, the true sense of the word. I was pretending to be the person I thought you wanted me to be, the person I thought I had to be, to project this image. I learned later it was called impression management, and that was a big one for me. And where I was always trying to look good no matter what. And my life really reflected that, is that I was doing everything I could to make myself look like I knew what I was doing, basically. And the truth was that I didn't. And that was a constant source of I'm not going to say irritation, but inadequacy is probably the best word, that I just didn't see myself as measuring up. And so I had this phony life or phony image that I had projected to the world around me. And it was a house of cards that's basically trying to tip over, and I'm trying to keep it from d tipping over. And so that was something that I struggled with. And of course, underneath it all was a lack of faith and trust in God. Even though I had had a religious upbringing, that it hadn't stuck. That I did fit. Maybe not quite agnostic, but trying to ignore the existence of God and not let him have part of the action in me living my life, that I'm going to live my life and I'm going to do the best I can to pull that off. So all of this, all if I look at all of it now and just say, what does it amount to? It amounts to my life was a mess. Thanks. So that it amounts to that my life was a mess, and that when I came to that part of the step one, the one thing that really helped me put it in perspective was in Chuck See's book, A New Pair of Glasses. He talks about my life is unmanageable by me, and when I added the by me part, that made a huge difference for me, is that there's a big difference between me trying to manage my life and it being unmanageable. But if these steps, which that we're going to be talking about step two next week, where we're talking about turning towards a higher power. And I think that all of the things that were falling apart that I talked about were so my life was a mess there, but don't forget about the food. At the same time that this was going on, that I was getting pounded by the food. I was binging all the time, all the time. I was binging, and I remember I had this binge ritual on Saturday mornings. The company didn't work, and so there'd be nobody down there. And I would go down, I would clear my desk, and then I'd go to one of these little stands that you have in the corner of a industrial area. And I would go in there and pretend that I'm ordering food for a whole bunch of people, but it was all for me. And I would take it back to the office, close the door, and have a binge. And I would be there for maybe an hour and a half, and then I would clean everything up, throw the trash out in the trash bin, not in the office, and I'd be on my way. And I did that on Saturday mornings, but this particular Saturday morning, the last Saturday morning, is that I went to the place, and the guy started loading. He had put a box on the counter, and he starts loading it with my order. And I couldn't wait to get it in the car, and I couldn't wait to get behind closed doors. I started eating it right there in front of everybody, and people were looking at me, and I couldn't stop. Scared me. I could not stop. And I had always had this idea that I could, That no matter what, I would be able to stop when I really had to, and I couldn't. And so on top of everything else, I was really aware of my powerlessness over food, and that really played a big part in bringing me to the program and the 12 steps. So this all came together. This is all part of God's plan to give me the gift of desperation. That's what the desperation looked like. All those different areas of my life that were falling apart, they weren't falling in place, and I was getting tired of pretending that they were. And I finally had to face up to the fact that if I was going to be able to make this program work for me, I was going to have to work the steps. So that's it. Thanks.